La 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 la.
Do 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 do.
La 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 la.
Do 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 do.
La 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 la.
Do 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 do.
La 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 la.
Do 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 do.
La 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 la.
Do 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 do.
La 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 la.
Do 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 do
do do do do do do do do do do do do do do. It's the Day Trippers. A bit good, isn't he? And we got the win, and that's a bit good, isn't it? And we look like a team at times again, and that's great, isn't it? In fact, we've got 2 weeks to get Alan Sturridge and Emre Can fit before we start again, so things are looking up. Tonight we revamp our format, primarily because we can't be arsed to do more than one pod per week. We'll revisit the week that was and look at the teams that connected the two games, there were some. We'll discuss the standout performers and we'll assess what we've learned. In the week of yet another stupid bloody international break, we have more Trippers chats suggested by you, our lovely listeners, reflecting the burning topics on Red's mind. So joining me tonight in the bunker for lots of happy talking happy talk are Alco Tramp drinking buddy Neil Gray, pub portrait photographer Stephen Daly, Scouse songsmith Ray Brady, and founder of the John Glenson Fan for Life Club, Phil Casey. And we'll also be joined on the line by returning guest Jay Riley. Okay, our new signings have been a mixed bag, chaps. Two in particular have made the headlines this week. Let's start by discussing the man that many had forgotten, the shorts stretchingly exciting Adam Lallana. in the midst of some very incessant... you should see that, lad. In the midst of some fairly incessant griping about a transfer strategy, just, lad, he seems to have been a bit of a vindication of Rodgers' eye for a player, does he not, Steve Daly?
Yeah, last two games, absolutely. I think he's had an excellent impact. It was great to see him get a goal the other day, because I think with any new player coming in, just bagging a goal early in the season gives you that little bit of confidence, takes the weight off your shoulders. And yeah, I did slate him. You know, I'm not going to lie, I gave out about the price that we paid. I more so gave out about the price that we paid for him than slating the bloke. But with Coutinho gone off the boil, you know, he is that link player that I think we need. Sterling's not had the greatest few games in the last few weeks as well. And, you know, you can't expect everything to come through him. So it's great that Lallana has stepped up and has been able to make an impact, and I thought he was excellent on Saturday.
That's a very good point there, and also interesting that Steve O mentions Coutinho, Neil, because he's been kind of out Coutinho-ing Coutinho, hasn't he? Lovely touch on the ball, very calm in possession.
Yeah, well, he's obviously a very good player, and I could never understand the consternation before he signed to say that he wasn't going to live up to the mark. I mean, if you think back, he was shortlisted in the top six players in the player of the year last season. So I think he scored 10 goals last season, which maybe isn't a great return, but if you think of the combination with him and Lambert, it was a really good return. And 25 million for him, I think, was a good it was a lot of money, but I think he's worth every penny. So I was never in any doubt that he was going to perform very well. He's kind of vindicated me more than that, because I've been backing him since the day he signed.
Good lad.
So I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
I'm happy for you.
Vindicated you more than Rodgers.
Yeah.
I don't really care about it.
It's all about me, Steve.
Are we saying he's a round peg in a round hole?
Tune in later on for that one.
What you mean some of this was pre-recorded?
No, I didn't say that. Ray, talk me through the beautiful skill for the goal, that little drag back and everything was just gorgeous.
Oh, it was magic. It was absolutely magic. Totally self-made. I'm still struggling to find, well, I don't know what foot he is. My foot, genuinely, I haven't a clue. Is he left foot or right? Absolutely unbelievable. The force flick to start with to get a little is run on the man, and then a nice bit of skill to beat the next man, lay off, back into the box, and left foot shot buried. Absolutely brilliant. A super goal.
Absolutely. Phil, are you excited?
Yeah, look, he got his beard back, and
that probably
seemed to get his power back. His power back with the beard back. I do like look at him, and at times I'm there going, because he just doesn't look like he has the strength. But fair play to him, he's getting up and down the park. You know, he's knocking players around. He's able to shield the ball well. He's doing all the things you want an attacking midfielder to do. He's playing sort of on the left hand side, which is, you know, everyone thought beforehand of saying, oh look, he's best as a 10 or whatever. And I thought he probably had his best game against West Brom and coming in off the left hand side. And it's something that we talked about before in that system. He was getting into the box. He was attacking from the left wing in. He wasn't hanging out wide, and it gave Moreno the space to operate down the left channel. It just opens up the channel for Moreno to get into. So, you know, that's really encouraging. And as Steve said, look, with Coutinho a bit off form, Sterling's a bit off form as well. Like, Sterling can't seem to find his own players with the ball at the moment. He's stood up to the mark. Himself and Henderson, the last two games, the Merseyside derby and this one, everyone's been saying, well, you know, it was Hendo for man of the match, or maybe it was Lallana. It's been neck and neck between them. Both of them put in excellent performances in those two games. And going back to the Champions League match where we didn't perform, he comes on for 20 minutes and he was a big difference when he came on. That was the moment we actually looked like we might get a goal back, and we created everything that went on. So fair play to him. He stepped in. He's of all the players, he's taken his price tag and just ignored it and just delivered it on his performance.
He's done what you want from a player that's cost that amount of money. Yeah. And that's come in and not worry about, you know, what they cost. Yeah. Ultimately, yeah. Just
there's
play
no
their
baggage.
Game.
For him, there's no baggage with him. There's no baggage
that's
with
what
him.
It says on the team, yeah, the English premium that you're supposedly paying for of getting a player that knows what to do straight away from the off and no bedding in, and period, he's and he's doing it now.
And you know, the other thing is, he puts a run of 7, 8, 9 games like this, right, and has a dip in form, which is natural for players to have. The likes of Coutinho will be coming back into form at that point.
Absolutely.
And straight away, nobody's going to be talking about the £25 million price tag at the end of the season. No. It'll be forgotten about.
It's the perfect thing that Ferguson used to be brilliant at, getting that 10 games, 12 games out a of somebody, and then they dropped out and somebody else came in.
He's
and
a
they
senior
got
player now, isn't he, all of a
absolutely.
Sudden? Yeah, I mean, that's what they paid the money for, and that's why I'm not surprised, because they paid for a senior player and that's what we got. I mean,
and he now has a song as well.
I was, though, Neil. I was very happy.
I know you are. Well, you're critical by nature.
I think I'm a positive person by nature.
No, but I think
I don't think so.
I think
I would criticize.
What are you criticizing me for?
No, but like, in fairness, right? And the criticism was valid. You were looking at a guy who's 26, 27, right? We're paying an awful lot of money for him, right? Even though Neil said, like, he scored 9, 10 goals last season, you're saying to yourself, right, we're trying to replace a guy who scored 30 goals for us and had 25 assists. Do you know what I mean? And you're saying to yourself, is he going to bring it? Now, the one thing what I liked about him, and what I think he does, what he'll do well in the Premier League, is he runs at players. And players in the Premier League don't like players running at them. And you can see that when he gets in the ball, he runs. The defenders don't know what to do.
You haven't a clue what way he's going.
No. And that's it. Like,
he gets beyond the forward as well, Phil, which is a
that's
massive,
what I'm
which is a massive difference from what I've seen from the game at the weekend. Our I mean, he was in the box on his own ahead of Lambert or Balotelli, whatever the case
that's
is.
That's fucking hard, isn't it?
But I thought you weren't critical.
But like, no, and you know, it's bringing something, and we need that, because, you know, when you look back to the Champions League game, there was that lack of verve in our attacking play, right? You compare him to another 20 million plus player in Markovic, and you're not seeing the same return from him in terms of performance wise. And I'm not going to hammer Markovic, because I did before, and I've stood up for it, and I've said it, and I've stood up to other people when they've said it online and put it to me. But like, I'm going to be honest, I'd rather talk about him because he is delivering, and we want to talk about the players that are delivering, because they're the ones that are going to bring us through the next 3-4 games and get the points on the board. And you know, if he's able to come on in a Champions League game against the likes of Bale, where you need a performance to come on, he's shown what he's going to be capable of in the next round of games for the Champions League matches, and he'll be a bit of an unknown quantity for the teams that, like, for Real Madrid. They're not going to look Adam Lallana's not going to featured on their radar when they come to looking at danger players for Liverpool. It's going to be Sterling, it's going to be Sturridge, it's going to be Gerrard, it's going to be Balotelli, and now they have something else that they're going to have to look at when they go to analyse what we're going to do.
It was lovely to see him enjoy scoring so much as well. Ray, you
he had a big vein throbbing in his neck.
Yeah. I just let that one sit. Ray, we needed that. We needed those points. It doesn't really matter how we achieved them.
No,
and I don't think anyone was too comfortable. It wasn't an enjoyable watch, let's be honest, that match, but we needed that win.
Yeah, that's all it was about. It's just the word crisis was starting to get bandied around.
So
3 points was vital. The first 10 minutes, I actually thought we looked like we were playing at that bit of pace that's been lacking out of the team, and then it dulled down a bit. The atmosphere at Anfield, like a church again, very, very quiet, and you were expecting things. So from that point onwards, I went away from thinking, hoping that we were going to hammer them in to get 3 points. Doesn't matter how, if it goes in off someone's arse, off a free kick, I don't care, 3 points. So job done, job done. Go away for the break and tails up and the confidence.
Is it fair to say that this break is now more of a, almost like a godsend then? Because it gives us a chance to get Chan back, to get Alan back, to have Sturridge in decent nick. Mm-hmm.
This is regrouping time, most definitely, and get the boys back. Like you say, Alan and Sturridge, predominantly. God, who knew we'd miss Joe Allen as much as we have, you know? But this is it now. 3 points in the bag, a slight bit of confidence, and get the new lads back in and start working on a system.
And momentum, one in a row.
It's better than none in a row, isn't it?
Too many times in the last 12 months, I think we've been regretting the fact that there was an international break coming along.
Yeah.
And now we're in a situation whereby we're saying it is the perfect time for us just to get that 3 points and just say, right, okay, let's settle everything down. Let's get our shit together now and regroup. And I think we're talking about the different things. I think, we only saw a bit of him during pre-season, but I think Emery Chan will be a massive addition to that midfield. We're talking about how we miss Joe Allen. I genuinely don't see that. I don't see the need. I think we're missing the Coutinho of last season more than we're missing Joe Allen. That's being honest with you. That's actually what I feel. I think if we still had Coutinho, Hendo and Gerrard in there.
And Sterling playing to us.
Well, no, Gerrard, Hendo and Coutinho, because it was Sturridge, Sterling and Suarez in the top three, with Coutinho dropping.
I just mean in terms of form.
Oh yeah, sorry. But I just mean in that middle three, I think we miss a player.
Yeah.
There, not necessarily Joe Allen. We miss a player with legs, with the ability to get in and around.
A player with legs.
Yeah.
And listen, Steve,
prerequisite. When you sign a player, you should always go for the players with legs.
As our resident.
That's why them slugs never made it.
Except Turbo.
Fucking Turbo.
I'm trying to think of another snare now. There's
an entire movie with every character named. Nobody remembered anybody but Turbo. It was the only one.
And his mates.
By the way, he was a fucking snail. He wasn't a slug.
He was a slug with a gap. He was a posh slug.
He was an itinerant slug.
Yeah.
Oh man,
what,
Steve? I was actually going to ask you about something semi-sensible, and
pointless on this part.
I want to draw the conversation back to Balotelli. Look, after the Champions League struggles, we had him being called No Clapatelli here by some smart bollocks on my left. Then he gets benched against West Brom. What did you make of his response to being benched when he came on? And how did you think he looked? And was there any kind of sign that he was responding?
No, not really.
You didn't think so?
I didn't think a huge amount. I think what you get, what you see is what you get with Mario Balotelli. And benching him, fining him, it doesn't matter to him. I just unfortunately don't think that that's the way to approach an issue with him. I don't know what is the way to approach an issue with him, but he's just one of those fellas that doesn't respond. I can imagine him when he was fucking 8, you know what I mean? Him getting given out to in school for not being, doing his maths homework, and I'm sitting there not giving a fuck, standing in the corner, I still don't give a fuck, and I'm not doing my maths homework tonight, whatever it may be. That's his demeanour, that's his way of being. I do think we'll see a lot more from him when Sturridge is back.
Yeah.
I think that's when we'll benefit from him as a player. I think that's when we can actually start to judge him, because trying to play him, it's not his fault that he can't play the role that Daniel Sturridge plays for us and the way we're set up. That's management's fault for not having a like-for-like player to come in knowing that Sturridge is going to miss 15 games a season. So I know that's what Remy was lined up for because he was a very similar player, but that means that Remy and Balotelli should have been bought. And if not Remy, why didn't we have a backup for Remy? You know what I mean? If Remy was our thought process, why did we not have a backup
contingency?
I'm not so much worried about, I'll put it this way. I think the most interesting part of the game came out of the game on Saturday, and it would have been interesting had we done it against Bale on the previous Wednesday, was when Brendan Rodgers finally put Steven Gerrard back into that attacking midfield role. And then Balotelli looked like he knew the balls to play to get the best out of Balotelli. Like, if all of a sudden he becomes a threat, he's playing, he knows how to spin a player on the edge of the box, and he's getting in and he's getting shots away. And it's interesting that even Brendan Rodgers recognised it and saying, look, I'd put him in there. And sometimes with Rodgers, and I know we're coming on to it next, you know, Rodgers sort of stumbled into Coutinho playing in the centre midfield last year because of injuries when we came up to play against Arsenal and Everton that time. And then all of a sudden, you know, because the players, the Sterling and Coutinho, etc., weren't able to get Balotelli into the game, he's forced to put Steven Gerrard into that position on the pitch. And all of a sudden, the light comes on and goes, hang on a second, maybe, just maybe, Steven Gerrard can offer something here. If we want to use the 4-2-3-1 system that he's used primarily this season, maybe I need to put Steven Gerrard in there. And you say Sterling as my right sided sort of part of the tree. Use Lallana, Coutinho, whoever it is, as the left sided side, because they're going to come in and they're going to attack from the wings. As we were talking, they're going to get into the box and become an auxiliary forwards. And Gerrard will prompt Balotelli to get the best out of him if we're missing Sturridge. And even with Sturridge back, I said it on the radio show, which is out this week as well. You know, all of a sudden you're thinking to yourself, Steven Gerrard and Torres, Steven Gerrard and Sturridge in that position, it could be brilliant. Like, I'm thinking like the season that Gary Mack had for us, you know, as he was coming towards the end of his career. There's no reason why Steven Gerrard can't do the same level of prompting from that number 10 position, because he doesn't have the responsibility to cover and cover ground as a defensive midfielder. It just becomes another string again back in our bow, which maybe had been forgotten about for a couple of years, that Brendan didn't seem to want to go
there. I think it could be an excellent option, because if teams have realised that with Gerrard as the deep-lying playmaker, that if you put the pressure on him quickly, it nullifies or at least reduces the impact that he can have on a game, as was proved yet again by Aston Villa a couple of weeks ago, Everton just didn't do it. Don't know why, because Martinez plays a high-pressing game, but they just never did it to us, and neither did West Brom with him, really. But what I'm saying is, being able to bring Gerrard into that position may just open up something a little bit different, whereby, yet again, they don't really know how to deal with the qualities that Steven Gerrard brings to the team. And I would agree with you on that, but we can't do that with Lucas and Henderson. You can't do that for 90 minutes. But, no, I know what you're saying, but I'm saying it's a great option when Alan comes back or when Chan is back. And if you want to play Henderson and Chan, or Henderson and Alan, as that two in the 4-2-3-1, then it gives you great mobility in those two lads, you know. And I think Henderson can, to an extent, play that screening role in that two, but with Chan there as well, being able to dictate what's going on, I think it could be
Neil massive. What do you think about that idea of, as players return and there are more options and we don't have to play square pegs and round holes, that we will have the option to put Stevie up in a more advanced role, like Totti was in midweek in the Champions
League? Well, I don't think that Gerrard moving up a bit further forward, I don't think the option ever went away. It's just the fact that our current forward players, our forward advancing attacking midfielders, just aren't performing. So it's probably more of a bit of a damning indictment on the form of everybody involved, that we have to go back to the old reliable Steven Gerrard to bail us out yet again. Mm. I mean, it's...
He didn't though bail us out on Saturday, because we'd already scored before that had happened.
Yeah, fairness.
But the point we're all trying to make here is, now if we're ever stuck against you, we'll just take Stevie from where he is and stick him up front, and he'll get someone a goal. And then you say put him in beside Mario Balotelli because he knows the passes, but he's the only one that can play the ball to Balotelli. I'm not having that. I don't agree with it, and I don't agree with it from the point of view that maybe Steven Gerrard is the only one with enough skill to pass the ball to somebody who's standing still. I mean, if Balotelli can't make himself available for a simple pass off any one of the other midfielders apart from Steven Gerrard, there's a deeper lying problem with Balotelli than just answering the Balotelli question by sticking Stevie beside him. What is the problem with Balotelli? I think he's a flawed personality, but I think we knew that before we signed him. I mean, he hasn't, just because he signed for Liverpool doesn't mean he's going to turn into a world beater and he's going to be hugging everybody and being the best player in the league and fulfilling the potential everybody says he has, just because he has a liverboard on his chest. That was never going to happen. We knew what we got. It was a panic buy. We have to accept where we are. I mean, he's a centre forward. His one sole job is to score a goal. At some stage, I mean, if he plays crap for 89 minutes and he scores a goal in the 90th minute, all of a sudden everybody says he's had a good game, and he's not even bringing that to the team. And we're kind of, now we're giving him another excuse. Now I don't feel like I'm hating him here, but anyway, hating on him a little, as they say. And now we're giving, I don't know who they say.
Shoot them now.
But I think now we're
no
giving him.
No one has ever said that in here. Just,
I think we're giving him another excuse now, saying he's going to get you. Oh, listen, Sturridge will be back soon, and then he'll come good. I mean, how many excuses do we need to
I
give
don't
him?
Think that's an excuse, though. I think if you go back to the sports game and you've seen how well the two of them linked
exactly.
up.
Yeah. Mm. Exactly.
God, he's a player.
Yeah, we're all forgetting him. He was 16 million. Jesus, his reputation was bigger than he was as a player. I wasn't expecting miracles. He was never a world beater on the pitch. I don't see the problem with the goal. Well, the system we're playing, there's not many strikers who will be getting goals at the minute with the way we're playing at the minute. I think everyone's being extremely harsh on him, in my opinion.
I'm not.
I've never seen,
neither am I, right?
Never seen not him me. Walking as hard I as am. He is now. Never. Now, in any games I've ever seen him for, he's chasing back, he's running his bollocks off for the team, and I would knock the fella. When I seen him playing with Sturridge against Bours, he looked brilliant, had a couple of chances, could have had a hat-trick that day. Self-created a goal there against Ludogorets. He's 16. I think everyone's expecting it to another Luis Suarez. It was never going to be that. He's an all-right striker, and I think we'll see much more of him when Sturridge is back with a 2
up front.
I don't
know what 16 million has to do with it though, Ray, because Sturridge was a £12 million.
Well, okay, but mate, right, what you I'm sort mean? Of focusing on, I think by the fact that people are being overcritical of him as though he was some world superstar and one of the best strikers in the world, and he never was that. He was just an okay striker, and he is, and I don't think, I think he'd struggle to I don't know who you'd pick out in the way Liverpool are playing at the minute, that you'd end up saying we'd be getting goals.
Here's my problem. Neil said he was a panic buy. The fact that he was a panic buy is an absolute disgrace. You know, we sold the third best player in the world, let's call him that, and our options were to buy attacking midfielders rather than to replace a world, you know, class, absolutely astounding striker with a striker. Yeah. We didn't do it. So we were left at the end to find somebody to fill the void. Our option to replace Luis Suarez was to buy Ricky Lambert and nothing else. And it was poor on that side.
Let's talk about Ricky Lambert.
No.
Let's talk about Ricky
Nothing positive is going to come from us talking about Ricky.
Well, we have to talk
I know we have to talk about him, right? But there's a level of harshness and something that Steve has said there, right? That we sold Luis Suarez and Ricky Lambert was the replacement, right? I think fundamentally this is where our transfer strategy is a bit weird, right? I think we bought Ricky Lambert as an addition to the strike force we had. Brendan Rodgers has said himself that you know, he would have liked to hold on to Luis Suarez, and I think if you have Suarez, Sturridge, and you have Lambert, then as a third prong, that's, you know, you can that's fine, right? Now we've got to a position where we saw Luis Suarez, and we don't seem to have had the foresight to have the centre forward that we wanted come in, right? And I'm not buying the thing. Oh, you know, we knew as it got close to the end of the window, we were struggling for who we can get in and the whole lot, right? They knew back in June, when the World Cup was going on, that Luis Suarez was heading out the door, right? There seems to be an ongoing talk that this was happening before this, and that the clubs knew it, because if there was a buyout clause in his contract, surely the club knows if there's a buyout clause in his contract and it's whatever price it's set at, that if one of the big clubs in Spain come in for him and he wanted to go the previous year and they put the money down on the table, he's gone this time.
They should have always had a backup plan.
But this is what I'm saying. So there should have been a plan that says, right, if Luis Suarez, who's a world-class centre-forward, is going out the door and we're getting X million, right? If our plan is to sign Lallana, Markovic as attacking options to replace the goals and assists that we're going to miss from losing Luis Suarez, and then bringing in another forward, that other forward should have been at the top echelon level. It should have been somebody special. And like I would rather have not spent the 20 million on Lazar Markovic and spent 36 million on a world class centre forward.
Of course, but that makes more sense.
Like what Chelsea did.
But
not centre forwards, but Fabregas as an example.
And Costa.
Yeah, but that's what they did. They needed a world class, and that's what they got.
I know there's the whole thing about identifying targets and stuff like that, right? But if you've 36 million in your pocket, right, you're going to get a top level centre forward. And I was harsh on Markovic last week when I was talking about it, but the thing about it, I keep looking at it saying, if you put all the money that we spent on Balotelli and Markovic together, and you spend it on one centre forward, and we've already got Suso and we've got Ibe, on, you know, who we've sent out on loan. I don't think what Markovic brings to the team this season, and that's being fair, and that's not writing him off or anything, right? But I think what he brings this season would outweigh what you would do if you'd signed a 30 to 35 million pound centre forward.
But think about it this way: why, as a club, if we were in second place and we wanted to take that next step to being a title winner, did we not have a top class centre forward lined up to complement Luis Suarez and Sturridge, rather than Ricky Lambert?
I think we're arguing more or less the same point.
Well, no, we are.
Just two different angles.
No, I'm not even arguing with you. I'm just making
an observation.
Wasn't Sanchez that man?
No, because how do you not know?
Wanted to shop in Harrods.
How do you not know that he doesn't want to come in advance? That's poor planning.
Fair enough.
I can't understand, if he is your primary target, if he is the player that you feel is going to be the man to replace Luis Suarez, why are you relying on Ian Eyre to do the job?
Lads, let's focus on the players that we have here. And I started off by talking about Ricky Lambert. And the reason I wanted to bring up Ricky Lambert is I think most of us are having the same feelings as we watch him. Maybe you can counteract that, or maybe you've got a different opinion. But you watch this kid and you want so badly for him to do well. And you have a level of patience with him. And that's mixed with incredible frustration at the complete ineffectiveness of him. Is that fair?
I don't want him to do any better than I want any other player.
No, that's not my point. My point is,
but I'm not willing him to do well. I'm just willing whoever is in that striker position to score goals. So what I mean by that is, okay, for example, it's a funny one. Markovic, I want him to justify his price tag. Okay, I don't give a shit if Ricky Lambert never plays another game for the club. I genuinely don't care.
Mm.
That's my honest opinion.
I'm glad I came to you first on this.
Yeah, but I'm serious on that. Like, I just don't see how he was a smart option for a club. There's no way that Man United, Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal, any of them were going to buy somebody of the ilk of Ricky Lambert this summer. There's no upgrade on what we had. He's no better than Aspas was. So I don't see what the point in buying him was.
Mm.
There was no benefit to it, and it angers me because I wanted to see us progress this summer. And whilst we've brought in a lot of players, and some of them may turn out to be good players, and I know Dave, you know, constantly believes that they will all turn out to be good players, and that's fair enough to him. But my point is that we should have been buying, our approach should have been for two or three that were really going to make the difference, and then supplement the squad from there.
Well, Ray, is it fair to say that the struggles that maybe he's having is as a result of, we mentioned earlier on, Phil Coutinho not at the top of his game, Raheem Sterling not at the top of his game. Is it a direct result of that and a lot of other things that you're not seeing the ball pinging around at Lambert's feet and him maybe getting a goal, a scrappy goal here or there, because the movement and isn't as effective, because it's slower, because it's more methodical?
Yeah, well, you could go either way in it, and you don't know whether that slow build-up play is to do with Ricky being up top end as well. I'd be the same as you, Trev. I'm looking and hoping for him to do well. I don't know why. It's just, you know, maybe it is their romantic story. I don't know.
Is it because he's the same age as the two of you?
Yeah, he's much
possibly,
younger than me.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
But I found myself hoping, but I mean, he just looks out of his depth. There's no two ways. He just looks out of his depth. And I struggle to see the pluses and, you know, you're saying bang balls into the box. Seville, that Wolf McQuillan was crossing the ball a hell of a lot, and it's not happening. He's slow off the pace. I even slagged there on Twitter there the other day. He was even slow getting over for the celebration after goals. He was last man over and looked out of breath running over to get him. He looks like something out of the Lancashire League. You know, really looks out of pace there.
Yeah, it's not going his way at the minute. Neil, talk to me about Phil Coutinho and about Raheem Sterling and how quickly you think things are going to turn around for the two of them, because we do need it to happen for at least one.
Let's take Sterling first, I suppose. I know it's a perennial excuse for a young lad, a teenager, but he still is only 19, and he's going to have peaks and troughs. He's played an awful lot of football. He's all of a sudden, for his national team, for England, he seems to be the main man. He's the main man at Liverpool now as well. It's a lot of weight to carry on young shoulders, I would have said. So he was bound to have a little dip in form. I'm not overly concerned by it. He'll come back to form, but maybe he needs a little spell out with the team. Maybe, I suppose, might help him. I don't know what the answer or I don't know how soon he's going to return to form, but he certainly will return to form because he has all the credentials.
Yeah.
So it's not really a worry. And Coutinho, again, I don't know. He seems to, I think he's just the type of footballer that plays in sports, for want of a better term. He seems to, he's like, he's always seems to be very good at the beginning of a game and then drifts off, and then he's good at the beginning of the second half and drifts off again. He comes in and out again. But at the same time, he's trying to play the pass. He's the man who's trying to play the killer pass all the time. So he's going to lose possession more than the other midfielders. And it's, and getting back to Balotelli again, it's very difficult when there's no movement in front of him.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about the sports, isn't it?
Well,
it
I was just wondering, was sports, that playing yeah. in sports or playing and sports?
I don't know, Steve.
I'm just talking here.
After Lallana, scored his goal, you can't be sure.
Steve-O, one more topic I want to chat about.
Can I just say, just on the two lads?
Oh, please do, yeah. No, please do, yeah. Go ahead, go ahead.
I'm not in the slightest bit worried about either of them. Oh, I think with Sterling, a goal is all it will take. It will just take him skipping by a full-back, sticking one in, and all of a sudden the zip will come back in. It's silly zip. Little stuff.
That zip
will come back in.
Just like Turbo.
Turbo
and zip.
I think it will. There are tiny little things that are wrong, and because everything's not going great for us at the moment, it's accentuated because everybody's looking to him to do it for us, make us win again. Raheem is the thought process behind most people, and you know he's entitled to have a bad game, the same as anybody else is. It's up to the other lads on the pitch to bail him out in that situation. The games that he's not having a great one, as Neil said there on Coutinho, he is a player that fits and sports. You know, from that point of view, he will have his good, you know, periods, and he'll have his periods when he's down, and that is the good thing about having Lallana there now, is right. That you do have an option.
Right, well look, stay with me there for a minute because I want to move on, like the last thanks man, because it's reassuring. Talk to me about Hendo and how high is your level of man?
I fucking love him.
But look, did you see in the getting of the winning goal, in actually Bollock and Gerrard for not taking the ball up to the corner and wasting time, is there sort of a baton passing moment going on there? Like, is he stepping right up now?
I'm delighted to see it, because we made the comment, and I made the comment last season a few times, that he only seemed to step up to the plate properly when Gerrard went off.
Yep.
You know, and now we're actually seeing him doing it for 90 minutes, and it's brilliant to see. And I can't wait for him to become the captain of Liverpool.
Yeah,
I genuinely can't. I love that man. He's my favourite player at Liverpool
in
now.
The world.
Is he your favourite player, Phil?
Where?
In Liverpool
at the moment?
Yeah,
still John Barnes, Phil. It's bigger.
Let's
be honest.
Just Luis Suarez. But look, it's great seeing him. It's great seeing him.
It's not lovely seeing
it's
you.
It's just great seeing him.
Tweet him. It's great seeing you.
It's great seeing you.
It is. Love, Phil.
And it's not just great seeing him, but it's great seeing him.
It's because absolutely great.
When you think about not seeing him, it makes you unhappy.
It does.
And then when you see him, it makes you happy.
You feel great.
Well, I tell you what, in all honesty,
he's probably
the only player at the moment that's undroppable. Of the entire squad.
Has been for a while, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you look at from 1 to 50.
Two, like, he didn't have the bestest game in the Champions League. Like, no. he's had,
nobody
like the rest of the team, he has had his down moments, which is very on Henderson, you know, in comparison to what we've seen, say, last season. But that's just the way things are going at the moment. But it's great to see the mental fortitude in him, you know, to put in that performance, coming off the back.
Moral courage.
Commitment. But it is, because, you know, even the goal, there was an element of maturity in the finish. It wasn't just
you
a whack.
Just read my mind.
Yeah, it wasn't just a whack. It was a lovely cushioned pass into the corner, and it was like there was a big rawr about the goal. It was that moment.
What was it?
Rory the Lion.
It was lovely to see it, because, you know, between himself and Lallana, like, for the two of them to score, you know, because even in the derby it was the two of them, you know, charging. They were carrying the flag into battle. They were rawr. that to me is a good sign, because when you have players who are, you know,
the opponents must have been terrified. Rawr, oh shit,
but the ball and rawr at him.
But to see that being delivered, you know, again, you're looking for other leaders, you're looking for other people on the team.
You want them to stand up.
To be leaders, right? And you're looking at our young players, the likes of Moreno and Manquillo, they've been leading from in the back. Of all our back four, those two players have been the leaders in the back, and you wanted our centre backs and our goalkeepers to be the leaders. Our full backs have been the leaders there, and then you look into midfield and Henderson's been the leader there, and since Lallana's got into the team, he's been the leader in the attack, right? And that's what you're seeing a progression of leaders through the team, and that's great to see, because it's the, you know, with the exception of Lallana, they are the young players that are in that side. And it also gives something when Sterling gets, we know when Sterling comes back to form, he's prepared to take it by the balls and go with it, and he'll give a rar. And then when you also, and then Coutinho as well. We know he's more than capable of giving rares. He gave loads of rares last year, and he's going
rares all over the shop.
Yeah. Great to see you, Jordan. Great to see you, man.
I am Lou Schwarre. You are listening to Trippers Chat
with Trev.
Okay, I suppose we'll have a little chat about Raheem Sterling and his contract situation. Jay, what can you tell us about the way things are at the moment? And is it a worry, do you think?
I don't think it's a worry at all. I mean, obviously, it's something that's been in the pipeline for quite a while now, along with a few of the other players as well. I mean, obviously, Daniel Sturridge has just recently signed a new contract, and the likes of Henderson and Coutinho and Flanagan are all in the pipeline as well as Sterling. But obviously, because he's a top talent, there's always like the type of Real Madrids and all that sniffing around. But what people have got to realise is he's only 19 years of age, so I think he's a grounded lad, and I think he's loving his time at Liverpool and the opportunities that he's getting. So I'm pretty sure it'll be fine. And I've seen reports where people are saying he's going to get $100,000 a week and stuff. I'm not too sure it'll be that high, because I think what will happen is with many deals now, it's all incentive based. So he'll obviously get a basic wage, and then it'll be incentives on top of that, which might take it up to the $100,000 a week mark. But I think some of the reports are a bit far fetched.
Yeah, Phil, it gets us jumpy, doesn't it? When we, especially in the back of losing such a wonderful player, that we hear about this guy who's our real shining light. Anything at all like that just gets fans jumpy, doesn't it?
Hey, yeah, sell him.
Yeah,
I know. Like, I suppose the worry here is that he's so good, right? Mm. That if the worst happened and we didn't make Champions League this year, you'd be scared shitless that he'd be gone in the summer. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, a big bid to come in and they'll say, right, he'll say he can't turn it down with 2 years left in his contract. The club will say, right, he's at the max value we can get unless he signs a new contract. He won't sign a new contract. All the things that happen, say, with McManaman and Owen comes back to mind when you're thinking about things like that. So I think it's good that the business, the club are opening the negotiations now, which is before it gets around to the automatic. I think, Jay, am I right? The 90 appearance or something, he had a clause in it where he was guaranteed he could come in and renegotiate the contract at that stage. So they're starting it early with him, and hopefully they can get it done fairly quickly. Like, I, to me, honestly, I don't care how much they pay him because he's that good.
That's my point. There's nobody better at the club, so you automatically sort of freeze when you.
Yeah, I know. And like, when you think about it, like, we took big earners off the wage bill over the summertime, and Agger went and Reina went and Suarez himself went, you know what I mean? So if you're going to have top players at your club, at some point you're going to pay top wages. And given that Raheem Sterling is one of the best young players in Europe, the world.
I do the songs around here.
But yeah, like, you know, pay him. Pay them all the money.
Yeah. Pay all the money.
Pay the man.
Steve-O, it's not our money, so you happy to throw it at him?
It is our money. That's what, like, everything
it's
we
not
did.
Your money.
It's the money I pay when I.
His LFC fans membership, that 15 quid a year he pays towards that. You know, that's a big part of Raheem's contract. No, my thinking would be, like, I suppose from a business point of view, I would think make a massive improvement on what he's on at the moment, but don't pay him at the top end. And the reason for that being, leave a little bit of wiggle room for yourself when somebody inevitably does come in. You know what I mean?
Hard nosed business.
So
get him in 85, 90 grand a week. Mm. You leave yourself still open to pay him 120, 130 when he's progressed over the next 2 or 3 years. He's still only 22 at that stage. Mm. You got to leave yourself wiggle room.
Get him on the board. Get him on the transfer committee.
I couldn't do much fucking worse than what's there by the sounds of it. But so that would be my thinking on it. But the truth of it is, it doesn't matter. Okay, it's important we get him down on a contract. Mm. Okay, regardless of what it is, it's important we get him locked down to a contract. But the truth is, we still are not a financial powerhouse. So if, you know, Bayern, Barca, Madrid want him, they'll get him.
So we have to steel ourselves to that ongoing possibility. If he plays as well as he's going to play, and we hope he will, everyone's going to want him.
We're in a position now whereby if we create the best players in the world, we're inevitably going to lose them.
Yeah.
And until we're winning the league and, you know, absolutely each year not worrying are we going to make the Champions League, but instead saying to ourselves, are we going to compete in the Champions League? That's when we can start holding on to our best players.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying we have to be a feeder club, because really there's only 3 or 4 clubs in the world that you'd be worried. Like Juventus come in, you can tell them to fuck off. You know what I mean? They don't have the financial power to do it. But Barca, I don't even know about PSG, because the French league is shit. So, you know what I mean? You might just get away with hanging on to him there if you're genuinely, you know, a competitor in the Premiership. But
yeah.
I think until we're at the point whereby we're winning the league and qualifying and competing in the Champions League every year, that's when you can start saying to Suarez, you don't need to go anywhere. You don't need to go anywhere. Sterling or whoever it may be is our quality player at that time.
Yeah. Another very, very strong story stroke potential reality that's going on at the moment is Victor Valdes to Liverpool. What's the situation there, Jay, as far as you're aware? Is the deal close? I heard some interesting rumours this evening about it being close to being done.
Yeah, at the weekend, apparently his representatives were at the game, and obviously, Rodgers was asked the question, wasn't he, if there's any news on it. And he seemed to be a little bit mystified by it. He's always like playing it down a little bit, trying to be coy about it. But I think it's evident to see, isn't it, that Liverpool do need a new goalkeeper. I think Mignolet's form's been very patchy. And people have said numerous times about him, haven't they, that, yeah, he's not a bad shot stopper, but he doesn't command his box enough, and he's not good with the ball at his feet, and he doesn't really instill confidence in the defenders in front of him. So I think it is one of them situations where Valdes has obviously been a top goalkeeper, and he's very experienced as well. And he was all set, wasn't he, to go to Monaco, and then he got that bad injury at the back end of last season at Barcelona, and obviously they pulled out of the deal for him. So it's just all about proving his fitness, really. And to be honest with you, I'm not really sure what way we'll go, because when you think about it, because he's had such a bad injury, maybe it's a case of we'll get him on a short-term deal and then assess it again in the summer, and whether or not we'll give him a proper deal, and I'm not too sure. But like I say, he's not going to come here on peanuts, is he? So ultimately, he's going to be on decent wages. So at this moment in time, he's got to prove his fitness, and I think it's getting closer, because obviously they said around the end of October time. So like I say, I think it's a work in progress for now.
Yeah, Ray, how's Simon Mignolet feeling with this floating around the background, and what does it do to him?
Hopefully shit. I've been biting my tongue and hoping he'd turn it around, but I let the West Ham game, I'm sorry, that's it now. That was the straw that broke the camel's back for me.
Really?
I've had enough of the guy now. Yeah, I've zero confidence in the fella at all. Yeah. I thought he'd done okay on the weekend, but no, he's just not for me. No confidence whatsoever. Every cross into the box, you're scared. Every one-on-one, you're scared. I'm struggling to think of his plus points. People say shot stopping, that's a gimme for a goalkeeper. I think every fan of every club would tell you that keeper's a good shot stopper. I think that's part of being a keeper. You want everything else that goes along with it. And Mignolet for me is gone. Sorry.
Do you not think it's a combination of a few things, like the very shaky lad set up in front of him, and the fact that, you know, there is this threat in the background? Is it not a couple of things combining?
Possibly, but as I say, this has gone on since he signed with me, so I couldn't even signal that out. I'm struggling to see his plus points. Like people, as I've said already, the shot stopping thing is just it's a no go for me. There's other stuff. There's no confidence. I don't feel for one second that he's got this covered. I'm struggling to think of his plus points.
He has you nervous.
Yeah,
big time. Neil, are you excited about Valdes arriving?
No, not particularly.
You're not?
I think it's just replacing like for like. Valdes is very unorthodox in everything he does. He's not exactly a commanding goalkeeper from what I can remember him playing anyway. He wouldn't be what you might he wouldn't be akin to a Peter Schmeichel or safe hands. Neville Southall comes to mind as well. And Pat Jennings, believe it or not, which is going
good
way
Lord.
Back.
Oh. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Have you forgotten like the whole 90s and started in the 90s and the whole going into Southall and
no, but like they're the ones that spring to mind, and he's not gonna be a goalkeeper that's come out and catch crosses. He's very unorthodox, and so you're just replacing like for like. I think it's more panic buying or trying to square peg in a round hole is another phrase that comes to mind. But
that's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah, it's not bad. I have it written on the back of my hand here. You were going to use those, put that in somewhere.
Yeah.
No, but I don't think it's
going to solve our problems. I think the problem should have been solved in the summer, and this is just more panicking.
What do you think of that shot? But it was a square peg in the round hole.
that's delightfully gloomy from Neil there. Phil, what's your take on Valdez coming out?
Delightfully honest, more... Trevor, like, I think.
Okay.
I don't have an issue with unorthodox goalkeepers. Never have.
Having been one.
But seriously, the thing for me is that, look, if Valdez comes in, he ticks 3 of the 4 boxes you want in what we consider a Brendan Rodgers style goalkeeper, right? He's very good at stopping shots. Now, he's not going to catch shots, whatever, but he'll stop them, right? Mm. He commands his box, not in terms of aerially, but he plays high in his box. So he's up at the edge of his 18-yard box. He pushes his centre-backs out because he plays high, a bit like Reina did when he was at top form. And he also distributes the ball very quickly and very effectively. Now, you put those 3 things in, you can probably live with the fact that he'll never catch a cross, ever, right? He comes to punch everything. The best comparison I can think of is Jens Lehmann.
Jesus Christ.
This is why everyone says Jesus Christ. Jens Lehmann was the goalkeeper for Arsenal when they went unbeaten in the season. Jens Lehmann was very unorthodox, but he was very effective as a goalkeeper for Arsenal. They got to a Champions League final with him. They won leagues with him. You mightn't have liked what he did on the pitch, but what he did was he won games for them. And Victor Valdez will win games for us. Would he be my choice for long-term Liverpool goalkeeper? No. But at the moment, would he potentially be better than what Mignolet can bring to the team? And I'm not talking about Mignolet's good qualities. I'm talking about the overall package. Then yes, I think he will. He also brings one thing that Mignolet can't, and something that's lacking in the defence, as I said earlier on. He's going to be an old head in that back four, right?
Mm.
You've got, if you look at potentially a Sacco, Lovren, Moreno, Manquillo defence, right? Not one of them are over 25, right? Even with Skirtland there, you've only got one player over 25 in that defence. And sometimes you need the experience, you need the knowledge of winning games, of seeing out tight matches where you're winning 1-0 and you don't lose your bottle with 2 minutes into injury time, you know what I mean? And that's the one thing that Valdez also brings to the defence. And the one thing, he's an organiser, he's a communicator, and I think potentially these are all type of things that if you listen to what Brendan Rodgers was talking about in the summer about what he wanted for his defence, it ticks so many boxes. But yes, so many people are going to be annoyed with the way he actually plays in goal, right? Because he isn't what you would call an orthodox English-style goalkeeper.
Steve, that's an interesting point to lead on from what Phil's talking about there, about the fact that he's going to be unorthodox, but the fact that he probably will play immediately. If he does, what does that do to Simon Mignolet? Because we're going to need Simon Mignolet if we're going to progress in the Champions League. We can't, you know, destroy his confidence.
I don't think he's going to play immediately.
Okay.
I think he'll come in, and I think that basically you'll see the competition for Mignolet. Mignolet doesn't have any competition there. He has Brad Jones sitting on the bench every week, you know, and he knows he's not under pressure. He knows he's never ever going to lose his place to Brad Jones at this moment in time. Bringing an experienced keeper in, and like Phil said, he wouldn't be my first choice either. I never really fancied him when both physically and from a footballing point of view when he was at Barca.
Would you go as far as to say that he's a square peg in what we call a round hole?
I may that's an excellent analogy.
Thanks, and, it just came to me there.
Now, to be fair, I've spoken on the pod many, many times about a young German keeper called Kevin Trapp.
Really?
You won't have heard of him, Phil.
Who does he play for?
Munching Gladbach. In all seriousness, I think it's a good signing. I think it's a smart move. I think even silly little things like, as Phil said about an old head in that back line, he'll know how to kill a game.
And that's probably what we don't have at the moment, in the sense of if we're under pressure, he'll know how to take the sting out of an opposition attack if he gets hold of the ball, be it spraying it out and taking it back off them and spraying it out again and just making their front line work and work and work and tiring them out. If, you know, if they've got the pressure on, he's an excellent distributor of the ball as well. I will give him that. He's Reina-esque in the way he can
possibly
actually
even
start it. Yeah, but possibly better. I haven't seen, you know, compared to the amount I saw Reina to the amount I've seen Valdez, it's always in the big games really that I'm watching Barca, if I'm honest, yeah. You know, yeah. Or hungover on a Sunday. They're the only two times I ever see. So from that point of view, he does have the ability to start attacks from, and with this pace that we have of Sterling and Sturridge, and hopefully, you know, be it a case where Markovic actually does finally get off the mark and we get to see what we, you know, was supposed to have been bought. I think he'll have the ability to bring them in there from, you know, bring in the attacking play straight from the back.
Yeah, fair enough. Jay, would you say that's fair enough? That, or would you think we're going to see him immediately into action? How do you think that'll go if and when he does sign?
I don't think he'd be brought in to just go straight into the team, because for obvious reasons, you've got to prove yourself, haven't you? You know, it's one of them. It'd be a bit harsh on Mignolet, even though he hasn't really performed to the levels that we really require. But I think long-term, Valdez will become the number one. But from my point of view, I would like to see how it would go till the end of the season. No, I wouldn't be rushing into giving him like a 2 or 3 year deal or anything like that. To be honest, the keeper that I would like is the Stoke goalkeeper, Begovic.
Yeah.
I just think, realistically, when we got Mignolet, we also looked at Begovic, and there was talk of Manchester City getting him. There was a deal in place for under Mancini, but obviously Mancini lost his job, and I think it was about £15 million, and Liverpool went for the cheaper option in Mignolet, and it's proved to be the case, hasn't it? Because for me, I think he's been a bit disappointing, to be honest with you. And I know he's still only a young goalkeeper, but Begovic is similar age, isn't he? He's only a few years older, maybe.
Yeah.
So he'd be my first choice. I mean, obviously you can talk about the top goalkeepers like Manuel Neuer and all them, but Liverpool aren't going to get that Bayern Munich goalkeeper, are they? So ultimately, you've got to like be sensible about who you want, and I think Begovic should be perfect for us. He reminds me a little bit like a Peter Cech style of a goalkeeper. But as I say, that's for another time, because we're not even linked to him anymore, and at this moment in time, it's all about Valdez. So hopefully, within the next 6 weeks or so, we'll probably get him. Hopefully,
Jay, you know, with like, you'll hear things as well that's going on, right? I'm always amazed, you know, we never seem to scout the German market. Now, and I'm big on the idea of German goalkeepers, because the range of talent that they have, right? And I know Steve mentioned my hobby horse, and I've been on it since before we saw Mignolet, which is Kevin Trapp. Now, the guy is meant to have a €4 million buyout clause in his contract at the moment that's enforceable in the January window. You know, no, with your knowledge you have, like, do our scouts seem to only focus mainly on Spain? Because we just seem to buy players from Spain and primarily Spain, when you look at where we're going from. You know what I mean? Do you have a sense that there may be, even if the players that we sign don't come through at a greater percentage in terms of the money that's being spent, will Fallows and Hunter start getting called into question as to their range of talents and what they're bringing? Because you've said it yourself, some of the selections they make seem to be at odds with what Brendan Rodgers wants, even himself. And I suppose that'll take us on the Sacco. But, you know, I'm just in general.
We got Emre Can, didn't we, from Germany? So, you know, obviously that was one. But I think that was Sammy Hippie inspired, because he'd obviously managed them, hadn't he? So he'd give us a little, you know, the heads up on him, how good he was, or potentially how good he could be. In the past, we did look at that Ter Stegen, who ended up at Barcelona. So it's like anything else, isn't it? If Barcelona are after a goalkeeper the same way as Liverpool are,
yeah,
9 times out of 10, he's going to choose Barcelona over Liverpool. But we're also being interested in that Julian Brandt as well, you know, the young kid at Leverkusen.
Yeah.
So it's not as though we don't look at that market. But, you know, Emre Can's the only one that we've really bought. So, you know, it's one of them, isn't it? It's like, you're quite right in what you're saying. I mean, obviously, in Brendan Rodgers' tenure so far, there's been like a few funny signings where you think, has he signed them, or has it been the committee? You know, even last summer, you know, you're looking at like the fact that we signed Iago Aspas and Luis Alberto, and are they really Brendan Rodgers type signings? I mean, you know, you've got to think, are they committee signings? Do you know what I mean? It's a little bit unclear. I mean, Brendan Rodgers is part of that committee, don't forget.
Yeah.
But obviously, because there's a few of them, it all goes to a vote, doesn't it? So it is quite complicated, really, and it's difficult to get your head around, but there is some mysterious deals that go on. I mean, if Brendan Rodgers had his way, though, Liverpool would probably have Ashley Williams playing centre-half for us. So
yeah, that
depends
is...
Depends what you want, who you trust the most, the committee or Brendan Rodgers.
That is a worry. Jay, one of those players in that category you were talking about is Mamadou Sakho, and with his recent troubles now, of course, there's stories starting to circulate, a little bit of rumble about, you know, even perhaps a departure at the next window. Do you think there's anything to that?
You know, Sakho, he divides opinion so much with Liverpool fans, because you get some Liverpool fans who just think he's our best defender, he's this big beast, and he's fantastic, he's great for France. So all of a sudden, because he's great for France, that means automatically he's great for Liverpool as well. Now, to be honest with you, I've never been 100% convinced by him. I just think when he first came, I put the term of he's like Jimmy Traore on steroids. I'm never convinced by him. I just think he looks nervous to me on the ball, and maybe that's just the way he is. And apparently he comes out high on all the passing stats and what have you. But I think it's clear to see Brendan Rodgers doesn't really think he's as good as what certain Liverpool fans believe he is either. And his opinion matters the most, because he's ultimately the one that picks the team. I think, let's be honest, none of our centre-halves have performed very well, have they, over the period of time that Sakho's been at the club. I mean, Kolo Torre's got loads of mistakes in him. Skrtel's just like, you know, let's be honest, he's very rash, isn't he? He pulls people in the box. He's all over people in the box. He's very clumsy. And Lovren's had a terrible start to his Liverpool career. So it's difficult, isn't it? Because out of all four of the centre-halves we've got currently to choose from, none of them are convincing, really, are they? But I just think the person whose opinion matters the most is Brendan Rodgers, and it's quite clear to see that Skrtel and Lovren are the two that he really fancies, and Sakho's not there as the main one. And it does really wrangle with a lot of Liverpool fans. A lot of Liverpool fans are really disappointed in that fact, because they do think Sakho's the best defender we've got. But like I say, what happened recently, I got told in training before that game, they had a problem in training between Rodgers and Pascoe, and it was a build-up from that, and then obviously he was left out of the team. But then it came out that he had an injury, and then you're thinking to yourself, surely to God, that's not true, he hasn't got an injury at all. But he wasn't called up to the French squad, was he? So he clearly has got some sort of problem. But, you know, he's not going to be happy, is he? Because, let's be honest, he's in the team, and then he's out the team, and he's probably looking at it thinking, all these other centre-halves, are they any better than me? He probably believes in his own ability and he thinks he's the best centre-half that we've got. But for me, he's made mistakes as well. And it's difficult to say, isn't it? Because, I mean, from my point of view, it's up to Brendan Rodgers ultimately. But I do think he divides opinion. And as regards him maybe being sold in January, I think we'd leave ourselves short if we sold him, because the amount of players that we've got loads of centre-halves, like Cotes is out on loan, Ilori's out on loan. But ultimately, if we let Sakho go, we'd leave ourselves short. So I can't see it myself. But what got me was when we signed Sakho, we were told, weren't we, and he was coming out saying he is like a marquee signing. But I was thinking, who's he trying to kid here? Because it's quite clear that Brendan Rodgers has never been convinced by him.
Yeah. Jay, before I go to the lads on this, because I want to talk to them about that too, please tell me that story that you heard about the bust up was actually between Rodgers and Pascoe, because that would be just brilliant.
I don't know the exacts of it, but apparently something happened in the training session before that game.
Fantastic.
It was a fallout about Sakho. I don't think it was Pascoe and Rodgers coming out. I think it was a disagreement with Sakho.
Right.
And it involved them too.
All right, okay.
Did Pascoe want the shorts?
That's what I was hoping. I was just hoping it was a shorts-based argument. Neil, would you be sorry to see Sakho go if this thing does come to a head, or do you think it's all nonsense?
Well, I'd be sorry to see him go from the point of view of that we're very short at centre-halves anyway. I mean, there's a fundamental problem with recruitment there with the centre-halves and people that have come in since Rodgers has been there. I mean, none of them are up to standard. Like Jay was saying there, he was supposed to be... Excuse me, he was supposed to be a marquee signing. I'll do the inverted commas things there at my fingers again.
That's good, yeah.
He never was. I mean, he's not. He hasn't convinced me from the start. I don't find him at all convincing. And everybody, the throwaway comment seems to be, oh, sure, he's great for France. I watched the World Cup the same as everybody. He wasn't exactly exceptional for France either. I just think there's an undercurrent of panic when he's in possession. He doesn't fill me with confidence whatsoever. And it's in, having said that, we can't let him go because we're badly, there's no cover there.
We need that panic.
Yeah, no, but sure, what do we do if Skirtle gets injured? Sacco comes out. I'm missing it. It's not getting any better, but that's all we have. I mean, there's nothing else there.
Yeah.
So it's a, he can't let him go until there's someone to replace him.
I'm on the other side of the fence. I rate Sacco. I think he's our, I do think he's our best centre back. And I think the Lovren-Sacco combination was our best centre-back combination. I think the goals against show, right? Now, I do think Skirtle and Lovren, as we said in the reviews that we were talking about, they showed a bit more form over the last two games. But at the same time, I had more confidence in Sacco and Lovren purely because Sacco reads the game better than Skirtle reads the game and was starting to cover for Lovren more than Skirtle covers for Lovren. Purely on a partnership basis, the way that you want centre-backs to play with, right? I do think that Sacco hasn't played near the form that he has displayed for France. And I watched France in the qualifying and even in the actual qualifiers that got them there, and Sacco scored the goals that, you know, that sent them on their way. So I think, you know, there's a bit of belief as well. If Sacco believes he's the main man, he's probably less likely to feel nervous on the pitch, because there's another thing. If you're a first name down on the team sheet, you feel that you're in a way the leader of the defence, etc., etc., that's going on. And that's Lovren. It's not Sacco. It's not Skirtle. Lovren is the first name on that team sheet. So he's the leader of the defence, essentially, of that back four. And Lovren is as bad of a panic merchant as Sacco is. You know what I mean? When I look at Lovren, I'm looking at him and I'm looking and I'm saying, where is the upgrade on Daniel Agger? In Daniel Agger's last season, and I don't see it. Now, I'm not saying that Lovren's a bad defender. I think Lovren has a fatal error in him in every single game. I think Skirtle has a fatal error in every single game. And if you have two centre-backs that have fatal errors in every single game, as I said earlier on, you're going to concede goals. And I think, in a way, the mismatch in the two of their styles is a bigger issue than, say, Sacco and Lovren, who are both proactive, both attacking defenders. And that's where I stand on it. But I do think Sacco has now put himself into a corner where he's also created a narrative that if he wants to get out of the club, he has it in January, because he can just say, well, I'm not getting a game. I didn't come here to sit on Liverpool's bench when I was sitting on my hometown team's bench. And that's my biggest concern about it. Because again, things like this, if results aren't going your way, small little arguments can fester in dressing rooms and can become bigger issues. And that's where I see it going.
Ray, is he part of the best blend that we have, Sacco?
Well, yeah, for me, yeah. I can understand everyone picking it out. He does have that thing where it almost seems like he needs another touch on the ball, but it's not as though we're gifted with a lot of centre-halves there that are great ball carriers and take the ball out. He's the best passer we have there. That's his only down point. I can't see any other down point other than the fact he seems to take a couple of seconds longer than he should with touches on the ball. Yeah. It's passing, 9 times out of 10 finds a man. He wins headers. I don't see. I can understand this thing about him looking slightly nervy or edgy, but my God, what are we putting him up against, or who are we judging him off here? Because the other two aren't up to much either, you know.
Yeah.
If you want a defender to defend, that's like he's the best we've got, if you ask me.
I think the problems are a little bit more deep rooted or more fundamental than just our two centre halves being a problem. I mean, I think your two centre halves and your goalkeeper should work in tandem or work as a tree, and if one part of that tree isn't operating to its full potential, then the whole thing falls down. I mean, their two centre-halves get their confidence from a goalkeeper and vice versa. I mean, your goalkeeper should be an authority behind you, and he should be like in a management position, I suppose, in behind his defence, and that's not happening. If you have a goalkeeper behind you who's going to instill confidence and he's going to do his job to the best of his ability and do it correctly, then your centre-halves, there's less of a panic around the place. And I think that's a fundamental problem there as well. I can't think all the blame can be laid at the centre-halves.
I think there's an element of Sacco and Lovren possibly playing better as a partnership as well. If Valdez was in goal, he's going to have a natural starting point of probably 10, 15 yards further forward than where Mignolet tends to position himself. And they want to press high. They want to play as a high back four. And you can see that Manquillo and Moreno are well capable of it as well. I think, as Phil pointed out there earlier on, it's hard to do that with Skirtle. Even though we do attempt it, it's hard to do it with Skirtle because he doesn't provide the cover for his centre-half partner. And therefore, what you leave yourself with is, if we get caught with that ball in behind Lovren and there's no cover from Skirtle, you're leaving a forward with fucking 40 yards one-on-one with Mignolet. And at this moment in time, you're not really, you know, putting your money on Mignolet to do the business there either.
Yeah.
If you're playing with Valdez and Sacco's given the cover to Lovren, and Valdez is quicker off his line, or he's further, his starting position is closer to the play than what Mignolet's naturally would be as well, where you benefit from that. That would be my thinking on it.
Nice pause. Jay, just to finish us out on that then, is going forward, is for you, is Sacco part of the best duo that we have there?
Like I say, it's very difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, I'm not convinced by all four of them. I just think it's horrible, really, because you're looking at the defence and you're thinking, last season, the amount of goals we conceded, it was ridiculous, and ultimately it cost us the title for me. You can go on about Gerrard slip and what have you, or Henderson being sent off and missing three games towards the end, but when you concede over 50 goals, it's not good enough. Like, and we signed Lovren in the summer to sort of like come in and try and solve a few problems, and it's not really worked out, has it? I mean, I like the two fullbacks, but as regards choosing your best pairing, I really don't know. It's anyone's guess. I mean, I'm sure you could probably ask like 50 different people and you probably get like quite a lot of different responses, because, you know, ultimately it's what do you do? I mean, none of them are good enough for me. And I've never, ever been a fan of Sacco. I've got to be honest about it. I've never been a massive fan of him. And I'm baffled by some of the opinions that Liverpool fans have on him, because I just think I'm yet to see it in a red shirt. He may well be good for France, and he's got better players around him there. Obviously, he's got Varane as new play centre-half for him. It's fine. But when it comes to Liverpool, my heart's always in my mouth when he's on the ball. And I take on board about his passing accuracy and all that. But I just think he just looks like he's nervous all the time in possession. And as I say, it might be down to the system. It might be down to because there's no confidence in behind him, because Mignolet's pretty poor. Even in front, there's no protection in front of the back line, because Gerrard's playing, isn't he, there? And let's be honest, he's not the best, is he? He's playing as a holding midfield player. So unless Liverpool signed a proper defensive midfield player to protect the back two, I really don't know. It's a difficult one to assess. But I think, like, when you're looking at it with Lovren, I find him baffling, because he's right-sided, but he prefers to play on the left side as a left-sided centre-half. It's nuts, isn't it? You know, you would think, wouldn't you, really, Lovren to be the right side and Sacco to be the left side. But for some reason, it appears to me that Brendan Rodgers seems to fancy Skrtel and Lovren. And obviously, he's got this affection towards Skrtel, because maybe it's because he's the most experienced centre-half we've got. He's been at the club the longest, and maybe that plays a part in it. I really don't know. But to me, it seems like Sacco's down the pecking order.
Jay, as ever, thanks a million for your thoughts, mate. Okay, a couple of questions in from listeners.
Rar.
Subject, topics, stroke questions. First one's Wayne Fox Jones. And Wayne wonders, he says, I always have fried rice and curry from the Chinese across from the club shop pre-match. Do you have any, Steve-O, do you have any food superstitions?
It really sounded like you said Wayne Fox Jones there, so I was a bit thrown off. I'm not going to lie.
Totally apologise for that, Wayne.
Apology, sorry. Wayne Fox Jones. Do I have any pre-game superstitions? No.
Well, it was food superstitions specifically.
Lots of food superstitions. It's pre-match or just in
general. Go on.
I like to, if I get a curry and chips, I like to eat all my chips and dunk them into the curry sauce before I touch the chicken. Okay, I'm not one of these men, bit of chicken, bit of chips.
So this has nothing to do with the football, this is just how you're superstitious about how you eat your food. It's nothing to do with, if we eat my food this way, the football will go a certain way. It's just
You can bring it back to the football superstition.
Is this part something to do with football? Or?
Fucking ridiculous.
Where am I now?
Because it hasn't been for the last year or so. Why start now? I've no pre-game superstitions at all, be it food superstitions or anything else. I just go and watch the match and fuck off home.
Have you any other little quirks there about the way you eat your curry chips? Anything else like that?
Ooh, let me think.
Do you leave the meat to last in the dinner or anything silly like that?
Sometimes. No, not by. I did go through a stage where I put everything on bread. And I mean, fucking everything. I'm not even joking. I'm talking like lasagna sandwiches.
I've actually had a lasagna roll, chicken curry and rice.
Basically, anything that arrived on my plate for dinner went on to two slices of bread, and I just
Irish, though, isn't it? The Irish make a sambo out of fucking everything. Don't you?
My granddad used to eat Swiss roll sandwiches. That was fucking weird.
What was between the two slices of Swiss roll?
Swiss roll.
Morse Swiss roll. That's just three pieces of Swiss roll.
It was a slice of bread.
Bread either side of the Swiss roll.
Oh, good.
Wow.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Right, you're very posh.
What's that? Yeah. I have to try that. That sounds good to me. I'm having a go of it.
That's a proper. What's that's a proper roll? 2 o'clock in the morning Saturday. I'll try the Swiss roll.
Why not?
And the chocolate bread. Swiss roll is a bit stale. Stick it in bread, it'll be grand. Dip it in your tea. Yeah.
Make it soft again.
Ray, any match related or food superstitions of any sort?
No, I'd be lying if I said no. I find myself, if I'm wearing a certain jersey or T-shirt and we get a decent result, I'll go looking for that said same T-shirt.
Will you keep
jersey,
keep a run going?
Yeah.
What about you, Neil? Any superstitions?
Absolutely not. No, none.
None.
No.
You just.
No, sorry, I'm only like, taking the piss. No, to be honest, I haven't got any superstitions. Sure, if I had, I'd be doing them all the time. Sure, I'd never leave the house.
Yeah.
Because at the minute, Liverpool are shit. So if I had any superstitions, I'd want to ditch them.
Yeah.
So no, I haven't. No.
Well, that's brilliant. I'm glad we got to the bottom of that. Thanks for the.
I figured out my jinx.
What's your jinx?
I haven't been wearing the right hoodie to the games.
What's the right hoodie?
I can't find it anymore.
So maybe just stop going to games.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
That's a good superstition. If I go to the game.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's it.
I do have a superstition, actually, come to think of it. Yeah, I don't like to be all this texting and WhatsApping during the match. That does my brain in. I don't know what you guys are doing. Would you not just watch the match?
That's not really a superstition, though. That's more of an annoyance.
But that's why if this has only happened this year and we're doing shit.
Yeah, but
so just stop it and we'll be fine.
It hasn't just happened this year. Happened all around.
No, but for me,
you just weren't part of the gang.
Right, but that's it. Oh, but then I'm going over here.
Johnny made it over to that door fairly quick.
Brilliant flounce, that. Brilliant flounce. Neil, I'll come back to you. Barry Carr's wondering,
he's gone.
What's the word?
He's Neil!
Neil, Barry's wondering, what's the worst thing you've ever received, apart from a good beating? What's the worst thing you've ever received?
I can't say, just worst in case my mammy be listening to this.
Yeah, I can't
say. I suppose there's nothing as bad as a kick in the stones, sure, doesn't it? That's the worst thing I think ever happened to me, yeah.
Kicking the stones.
I'm still waiting on that fella to come back down. There's no sign of him. That was when I was 14.
Yeah.
we just have to wait and see. Maybe he actually only had the one.
And one massive one. That's why I mean, no.
Steve-o, any bad gifts over the years?
Fucking bad gifts. Yeah, probably loads of them. Probably should have thought through this answer.
Thanks, Rusty.
Look at this. Moving bastard. Look at him making up as he goes along. Just to finish with some admin then. Irish listeners who like to play football should come and do so here at Astro Park. You can book your pitch time at astropark.ie. On our website, lfcdaytrippers.com, we have lots of cool stuff at the moment. Fantastic articles from some fine writers. And there's always competitions there for you to take part in as well. There's a day trip coming up on November the 1st. Where LFC fans from all over the country are heading to Waterford for an overnight or in the Dooley Hotel. We're going to be there. We'll be recording something on the day and we'll want to get involved. So if you do want to join us, get on to YNWA Irish Reds and keep an ear out for our next Anfield FM show. The site has details on how you can access that station. Your day trippers tonight were Jay Riley, Stephen Daly, Neil Gray, Ray Brady, Phil Casey and myself, Trev Downey.
Stop. Stop. You wanted it that much. And then when it got down to it, she was changing gear in a Renault 4. Stop it. You're going to. Yeah. So that's about the worst thing I've ever
received. For younger listeners, a Renault 4 was an old car that couldn't change gear very easily. Postman Pat drove a Renault 4.
Pat Jennings drove one.
With his hands out the sunroof.
You want to see Pat having a wank?
Pat Jennings having a wank in a Renault 4.
And this slug passing me out. Turbo.
Very fast.
Yes, that's good.
Do you know?